Good morning, members. Welcome to the House Ways and Means Committee. I call this meeting to order and note for the record that a quorum is present. And the first order of business today is approval of the minutes for Monday, April 29, 2024. Vice Chair Edelson, can I get a motion?
That's my motion, Madam Chair.
Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say no. The motion prevails and the minutes have been adopted. And so we have two budget bills that we will be combining today, the House File 5245 and 5216, which are the Judiciary and Public Safety bills. And then we'll be taking up House File 5299, the Higher Education Supplemental Budget Bill. And we have Representative Frazier, who's standing in for Representative Becker Finn on the first bill, which is House File 5245, the Judiciary Supplemental Budget Bill. So welcome to the committee, Representative Frazier, and thank you for presenting this bill today in Chair Becker Finn's absence. And thank you, staff, for being here to assist with that. So I move House File 5245 before the committee. And the motion will be we're just going to lay it over until we do the procedural motions. So please tell us about your bill, Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. It's been a whirlwind few hours pinch-hitting for my amazing chair, Jamie Becker Finn. Can only hope to fill her shoes a little bit, and we're missing her already, knowing that her impending retirement is coming up. So thank you for letting me present this morning. I'll do a quick narrative of what's highlights what's in the bill, and then I'll kick it over to staff to walk through the numbers for folks. So House File, so this House File incorporates resources for our forensic examiners who perform statutorily mandated psychological examinations for civil commitment, criminal competency, and criminal responsibility evaluations. Also resources for cybersecurity for our judicial branch to try to be proactive in the threats that we see out there. For resources for our court interpreters to help district courts meet the increasing need for contract interpreters in court proceedings and to increase the hourly payment rate for contract court interpreters. And then also ongoing to reimburse court interpreters for time spent traveling to the job. We're also providing resources for juries, one-time funding to address the jury deficit created when working through a backlog of cases, much of what we're still recovering from the pandemic times. Then ongoing to also provide vicarious trauma services for our jurors, knowing the experience that they have and that they have to observe and experience when they're performing as jurors. Also providing safety and security investments for the judicial branch to award in a competitive grant program for courthouse safety and security improvements. We also created the Board of Civil Legal Aid, and we're reallocating resources from the Supreme Court to the newly created board. And the Board of Civil Legal Aid will approve a budget for CLS grants and recommend it to the legislator, establish procedures for the distribution of grants, and establish standards, policies, or procedures necessary to ensure quality advocacy for people who cannot afford private counsel. And then we've also invested resources and made some changes in our Safe at Home program. It makes small technical and substantive changes to the Secretary of State's Safe at Home program, including allowing individuals who live outside of Minnesota to apply to the program if they intend to move here within 60 days, which is currently not the case. We also provided resources for our restorative practice restitution program. And it authorizes courts to allow a juvenile found to be delinquent and to participate in the restorative process in place of paying financial restitution to a victim, and eliminates the requirement that a court impose a fine on a juvenile found to be delinquent. With that, Madam Chair, I'll turn over to staff.
Thank you, Representative Frazier. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself, and if you can walk through the fiscal part, that would be helpful. Thank you.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. My name is John Walls, House Fiscal Staff. You should have a spreadsheet in your packet for House File 5245, and I'll try to just run through it in about 60 seconds. Beginning on line one, we have the Supreme Court. We provided the Supreme Court with $4 million for the biennium. $1.75 million for 24 and 25 was for enhancing cybersecurity. And on line five, there is a $500,000 one-time appropriation for safe and secure courthouse grants. On line 14, you can see that the committee removed the $34 million per year for civil legal services beginning in 26 and 27. And on line 38, there is a corresponding addition of that exact amount of funding, and this is to take civil legal services out of the Supreme Court and make them their own distinct entity, the Board of Civil Legal Aid. On line 20 for the district courts, we have several provisions. Line 23 includes the what Representative Frazier mentioned for expanded access to forensic examiners. That is $26 million for the biennium. This will mostly aid counties in paying for the forensic exams. On line 24, we are increasing the rate that the examiners are paid from $125 an hour to $136 an hour. This costs $1,070,000 a year and continues as a permanent increase. On line 25, the ensuring access to court interpreters is $1.29 million for 2 years. And on line 26, the interpreter pay rate increase from $65 an hour to $75 an hour costs $235,000 beginning in fiscal year 25, and that also is a permanent increase. The court interpreter paid travel time is $170,000 in fiscal year 25. That is also a permanent increase. We have $788,000 per year in 24 and 25 for the jury deficit that was requested by the court. And beginning in fiscal year 24 and ongoing permanently is $25,000 a year for court-requested trauma services. Madam Chair, at the bottom, you can see the totals are $36 million for this biennium and $3 million for the next biennium. That was our established target, and I would stand for any questions.
Thank you. Great, thank you. And I think that concludes the bill presentation.
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Frazier. So discussion to the bill. Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have one quick question. I'm just not finding it on any of the fiscal notes or spreadsheets. So you're creating a board of civil legal aid, which I'm assuming is legal aid, and
right.
Now they're going to be their own board. And so I don't see anything about what are the total FTE counts. I see you don't have additional staff, but what is the total FTE counts that we're paying for now? And I'm guessing then that there's no additional, it's just that their existing function now just as a separate board, but how many is that?
Frazier?
I'm going to phone right here.
Okay, sounds good. Mr. Walls.
Madam Chair and members, the Board of Civil Legal Services, there is money distributed to different civil legal aid organizations and I believe civil legal corporations throughout the state, and it is not said they do not report FTEs in the budget process, so we do not know essentially how many FTEs, how many people this is paying for currently.
Representative Rarick.
Interesting, thank you. So Representative Frazier, do you happen to know if that was part of the testimony since we're making them now their own independent board?
Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do not recall them providing any details about particular FTEs during testimony.
Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I, in the future, if you would bring that, that'd be great. Since now they are going to be their own board, it'd be great to see how many FTEs does this money go for. And I know that they do great work. I'm not questioning that. I'm just wondering how many FTEs is that across the state. I knew there were little offices all across the state, and I understand their function and what they do. I was just curious as to how many $34 million in the tails per year, how far that goes.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just to kind of plug into this conversation, so they just transferred the money from the courts where it was being funded to this new entity. So, I mean, I don't know if there's anybody else. I'm looking around. I don't see anybody from the public defenders. So, yeah, that's what happened.
Thank you, Representative Scott. Team effort today, so thank you. Further discussion to the bill. Reed Groffel? Okay. Final word to the bill, Representative Frazier.
It's a good bill. I appreciate the support of members.
Thank you. And with that, the bill is laid over. And next we have House File 5216, the Public Safety Supplemental Budget Bill. So Representative Moeller moves that House File 5216 be placed on the General Register. Good morning.
Good morning.
And you have the A8 amendment. Would you like to present the bill or just take care of the A8 right away, Representative Moeller?
The A8, I think, will require some explanation, so if we could maybe go through the bill first.
That sounds great. Right. So, Representative Moeller, the bill is in front of us. To your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. So the Public Safety Committee was essentially allocated $10 million in one-time funding. The other funding that you'll see in the bill is reflective of the deficiency corrections from the Department of Corrections. So really, once we took care of the deficiency funding there, and it sounds negative to say deficiency funding, but that's really, it's a good thing. It's the contracts that they were able to reach with the DOC staff. And they're really getting close to being fully staffed, which is wonderful because they were understaffed, and they're very close now. So this deficiency funding is a good thing. And then after that, we were left with about $10 million one-time spending. And the majority of that money in this bill is going to Crime Victim Services. The Crime Victim Services Fund right now through the Office of Justice program covers things like domestic violence shelters, sexual assault advocates, general crime advocates, and child abuse centers. They get a lot of federal money, and then it goes through Office of Justice programs to get allocated to these wonderful services that are in all of our counties throughout the state. Unfortunately, the federal fund is shrinking, and it's shrinking faster than we thought. So last year, we tried to plug that hole and then give them a little bit extra because they haven't had an increase from the state, and I think it's been like a decade. But in spite of that, the federal fund is depleting even faster. And so we know of shelters that are in severe and other advocacy programs in severe situations, including in Dakota County, a domestic assault, domestic violence shelter had to close there. So we wanted to put as much money as we could into these programs. It's not enough. We need a long-term solution. I didn't have it printed for you today, but we had a letter with a huge packet of supporting folks from around the state. It was sheriffs, it was mayors, it was businesses, social workers, all supporting funding for these programs because they're so crucial in our communities and they're crucial for public safety. So the bulk of the one-time funding goes there, and then you'll see some other task forces that we have in the bill, and it's really set up to put us in a good position to address some of the ongoing issues we have when we go back next year into a budget year. So we have a task force on domestic violence and firearms to really look at the best practices and how to make sure that people who commit relationship violence, that those abusers' guns are removed from them. We have a task force on a holistic and effective response to illicit drug use to really look at the public health crisis that substance use disorder is. We have a traffic stop reform and working group, and that's going to look at motor vehicle registration because right now it is illegal if you don't pay your you don't have your tabs updated, you don't pay those taxes, and law enforcement can pull you over for basically not paying your taxes. We would like to look at a different way of doing that, but if we're going to do that, how do we make sure that that revenue is still coming in? And regardless of if we don't make any changes with the traffic stops and the tax, that part, we still know that there are people that aren't paying their taxes in that way, and we want to make sure we're collecting that revenue. So they're going to look at that. And then we have grants for law enforcement therapy dogs. That was a Representative Mueller bill, and that was a fun day in committee. So really that's, and then some of other sort of more neutral DOC and DPS policy items as well.
Thank you, Representative Moeller. And you have Mr. Walls there.
I do.
You're good. I think you walked through the spreadsheet pretty well there, so thank you.
Great.
Wonderful. So discussion to the let's go to the A8 amendment,
great.
Actually.
Great, okay.
So Representative Moeller moves the A8 amendment.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And so just to go through what this amendment is, so as part of the traffic stop task force that I mentioned and the work that we've done on traffic stops over the years. A few years ago, we started really taking a look at what are public safety stops, and we brought a bill to really try to limit the kinds of situations that people could be stopped for that didn't really impact public safety, like having an air freshener. And there are a lot in chapters 168 and 169. And we heard at that time that it was confusing for law enforcement, and they said to us, rather than create this structure that we had created, why don't you just, if you don't want something to be illegal, like rewrite the law and make it not illegal. So we had attempted to do that, but because these statutes are massive and they've really been added onto over the years in all different areas, it was we just didn't have time to vet that. So in committee, we showed that work. We showed the amendment we had. We knew it wasn't ready for prime time. But the two things that we felt like we could move forward with were the task force that I mentioned already, and then some language around when police stop people for violations of Chapter 168 and 169. Again, that's not DWI. That's not any, like, felony-level offense. These are things like speeding, or you have a taillight out, all of those sort of, I would call them, like, little things that are in statute. We felt that it was important that law enforcement not stop someone and say, do you know why I stopped you, to prevent them from saying that, just because it really serves no purpose. You're all of a sudden asking the person to make an admission, or maybe the person doesn't know why you stopped them. And so that was really what we were trying to get at, and we had lots of discussion about that in committee. Some suggestions were made, and so this amendment really incorporates a lot of those suggestions.
Thank you, Representative Mueller. Discussion to the A8 amendment. Excuse me, Representative Novotny.
Thank you, Chair Olson. Representative Mueller, I understand the situation that you're in with this bill. You try to make everyone happy, you make no one happy. In light of the incident yesterday with Charlotte, I'm going to really try to temper this just for my own sanity. But I've been here fifth session. And thank you for making the changes, at least paring it down to where you are now. It seems to address some of the concerns that we had. And this speaks more to the overall philosophy that the majority has, trying to change law enforcement's behavior based on the reactions of other people that they don't have any control over. As I was sitting here, I was trying to think of the meme that would be from the bill that we're at and why we're here and why we're making this law. Is it better than it was? Yeah. But that's like saying, you know, would you rather get poked in the eye with a stick or a slight bump from the shoulder? It's still a poke in the eye. I was thinking about offering a verbal amendment, and what are we going to do, tell the officers they have to declare their pronouns too when they come up to the door? It doesn't make any sense in the big picture, and given human behavior, there will be another incident that starts out as a minor traffic stop or a minor traffic infraction that, you know, you would call a pretextual stop, and it's still going to result in something bad, because as the state patrol, who's worried about traffic safety the most, if they stop someone for a traffic or for an equipment violation, they know most of the time only that the person has an equipment violation. They don't know that the person has a felony warrant. They don't know if this person's got a gun under the seat that they're not supposed to have and would probably be tied to other crimes that might get them actually some federal time, that might actually get them some prison time. We're doing so much to put the focus on how these peace officers out there trying to make the road safe on rules that everyone's agreed upon over the years that are safe and for the public interest. But now we're going to come in with a bill like this to nitpick and try to fix a situation that wasn't the cause of the situation anyway. And in a perfect world, I hope this disappears in conference committee, Chair Mueller. And thank you for working on what you did. But this is not worth a law or a change of law. Thank you.
Further discussion on the A8 amendment. Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I was just wondering, since this is telling officers, and we just heard from one, but MPPOA, where do they stand on the new language?
Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We drafted the new language yesterday. There was a lot going on yesterday, so I have not heard from anybody since I drafted the new language.
Representative Rarick.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. It's a little difficult to do. I'm going to call it substantive policy here in Ways and Means. I know you don't normally take testimony, so this is difficult. You know, I don't like that. I know you don't like that. So I was hoping that this was sort of agreed upon and, you know, everything is rosy and wonderful. I'm concerned, and I know we heard from one officer, and if you don't normally take testimony, so we probably won't be able to hear from MPPOA or the chiefs or the sheriffs or, you know, those that are affected by that. I know that when I have spoken many times in the past with my personal sheriff, who I spoke about on the floor last night, you know, these contextual stops, these stops for taillights and other things, expired tabs, many times, not every time, but many times there are other activities, other illegal activities that they uncover in the stop. I'm going to vote no on this amendment, particularly since it's brand new policy language that impacts an awful lot of, well, frankly, all of law enforcement, and we haven't heard and can't hear from law enforcement, Madam Chair.
Representative Novotny.
Have had conversations with the major law enforcement groups, and they don't support the bill with this language in it at this time. Strategically, I would suggest that I would encourage voting for this amendment because it's not as bad as the language that's there in front of it. So I hope it gets struck. I'm going to vote for it because it's better than what it is. The important provision that was put in about the not having evidence excluded based on the proper pronouns, but that's still my recommendation, and others can vote their conscience.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I just have a question for Chair Mueller. So as I'm reading this, that doesn't seem like there's any penalty at all. Am I right? I mean, it seems more like, it's just to clarify as I'm reading it, I'm just really, this is my question to you. Is this really just clarifying the expectation for police officers? If an officer, you know, defaults to the old way of saying, do you know why I stopped you? There's not going to be an axe that falls, or they're not going to be disciplined for it or anything. Is that how this is intended?
Representative Mueller.
Madam Chair, Representative Liebling, yes, thank you for that. We added that last sentence in, a peace officer's failure to comply must not serve as a basis for exclusion of evidence or dismissal of a charge or citation, to make that very clear. This is essentially advisory. We're hoping to change behavior. We're giving law enforcement the benefit of the doubt that this behavior can change and without any penalty.
Yeah, Madam Chair.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I read that last sentence, but it doesn't say anything about, like, anything disciplinary happening to the officer themselves. That relates to use of the evidence in court, which is good that that's clear. But just, you know, more to, does anything happen to the officer? It's not a disciplinary matter or anything like that. It doesn't go on their record. Is that right?
Representative Mueller.
Madam Chair and Representative Liebling, right. There's nothing in here that would require any kind of disciplinary action or anything like that. I suppose if an agency had a particular policy that there was a violation, but I'm not aware of any policies that this would be, if they didn't follow this, that they would be violating and then subject to discipline.
Thank you.
Further discussion on the AA. Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Moeller, that was an interesting discussion just now. I'm wondering if there's anything here, and I'm not seeing it, so I believe it's obvious it's not, but is there anything in your mind in this language that would prohibit department from creating said disciplinary processes for this language being used?
Representative Moeller.
Madam Chair, yeah, thanks for that question. I suppose a department could create whatever kind of, you know, policy they wanted to. If they were telling somebody to not do this and they were doing it over again, maybe internally there would be a situation, but I wouldn't see this as something that's going to the post board, for instance.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a comment then. Number one, I guess I would just point out that I really wish that this language had been in the Public Safety Committee or other, made a few other committee stops for so people had the opportunity to speak to it. I understand it was just drafted yesterday, but it just quite honestly doesn't make any sense that in the final hour without the opportunity for that input that we would be having that conversation today.
Further discussion to the A8 amendment. Lead Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Either for the author or for nonpartisan staff, I was under the impression that when we don't specify a penalty in statute that it defaults to a misdemeanor. Am I mistaken?
Representative Moeller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This isn't a criminal sort of penalty. I don't know if nonpartisan wants to come down here. This isn't something that could be prosecuted.
Hello, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Madam Chair, members, Ben Johnson from House Research. There is a provision in Chapter 645 that says if a statute prohibits specific conduct, that violation of that statute would be a petty misdemeanor. This says that the officer must inform. It does not say must not do something. So I would not read this as a specific prohibition on particular conduct.
Well, Madam Chair, to the testifier, my apologies. Line 4, line 5, it says must not. It says that.
Mr. Johnson.
Madam Chair, members, my apology. I was looking at the second sentence. You are correct, Representative Garofalo. It says that must not ask the operator if they can identify. So arguably the Chapter 645 petty misdemeanor provision could apply.
Okay. Representative Garofalo.
Okay, so, Madam Chair and Representative Moeller, in light of the fact that, and in a normal world, I would say that we don't need to worry about any city or county attorneys doing this, charging officers with petty misdemeanors. We're not in a normal world anymore. In light of that information, would you be just willing to delete this section from the bill rather than putting this in there that we were going to, that a peace officer could be subject to a petty misdemeanor if they simply do not follow this new language?
Representative Moeller.
Madam Chair and Lead Garofalo, no, I'm not, but I would be open to something that says Chapter 645 doesn't apply in this situation.
Okay. Well,
Representative Garofalo.
Can we do that right now? Is that all right?
Representative Moeller, I defer to you, but I'll just defer to you, Representative Moeller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't have the exact citation. Chapter 645, I don't have the exact citation. I don't know if that's something that we can do right now. Like I said, I am more than willing to do it now if we can do that. I'll just note two petties, as we discussed last night, are city attorneys. So perhaps some of the concerns that you all are mentioning, or maybe that alleviates it. But in any event, I am still willing to put some sort of sentence in there about that.
Yeah, and maybe, thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Moeller. Maybe it would just be, you know, however you want to address it. As I look at this language, just putting aside the policy considerations, it doesn't seem like it really does much. It doesn't. So it seems like other concerns are trying to be addressed. So I hate to pick a fight with Representative Novotny, but I ain't going to vote for this. I don't. All the things that police officers have going through their minds, everything they're having to deal with right now, and our public safety bill is focused on what a cop says when they stop someone. So I'll be voting no on this. Thank you.
Representative Scott.
Sorry to go after our lead. Thank you, Madam Chair. In addition to what Representative Garofalo said about our officers having so much on their minds right now when they walk up to a vehicle, it's a very dangerous situation. And keep in mind, folks, that these folks all pretty much now have body cameras. So it's going to be very easy to tell whether they lived up to this or not. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's... I think this is some really nebulous language. It shouldn't be in this committee. It should go to public safety where it can be fully vetted. With all the issues that we have in our world today, why we are doing something so petty is beyond me. And Representative Novotny, I'm with Garofalo. I ain't voting for this. And that's my only comment. Thank you.
Further discussion to the A8 amendment. And I will just say I fully am aware that we have a policy amendment in front of us in Ways and Means, obviously. I talked to Chair Moeller, and, you know, the intent was to improve the bill and to work, you know, with Lead Novotny on that. And so I, you know, said that this could proceed in Ways and Means and that we could get some work done, and I appreciate the intent of trying to work to improve this, even though we're not a committee that typically vets policy. And I appreciate everybody having this conversation today and Chair Moeller. But I just want to say that at the outset. So I feel like I'm giving it a lot of leeway where we typically don't because of the content here. And I just want to say I appreciate everybody's like good faith work on this, even though this typically is not where we do this. But the intent was to try to improve the language, and Representative Moeller has been working on that. So Representative Moeller to the A8 amendment.
Yep. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I do think we have an oral amendment ready. I will just want to correct something where it says there's been no law enforcement input. This amendment that you're seeing is a DE amendment of language that is in the bill. So we've talked about this issue in Public Safety Committee. We talked about this issue twice when both the underlying bill, Representative Frazier's bill, was heard, and when the omnibus bill or our finance bill was put together. So we did have these discussions in Public Safety, and we took that input into consideration, and that's why I drafted this DE amendment to take a lot of that feedback into consideration. So I just want to make that clear, and if we could move to the oral amendment. I'm not sure procedurally how we do that, but I'm ready for it.
All right. Great. So we will, I'll look to Mr. Johnson and Mr. Sullivan too. So Mr. Johnson, if you want to state what you think the oral amendment should be, we'll have discussion on it. I'll have Mr. Sullivan restate it, but so we'll make sure we get it clear and that we take the input we just heard. So Mr. Johnson.
Madam Chair, Ben Johnson from House Research again. The oral amendment would be page 1, line 9, after the period, insert section 645.241 does not apply to violations of this section, period.
Thank you. Mr. Sullivan, did you had that and that makes sense here? Okay.
Yes, Madam Chair, that's the correct citation, 645.241.
Great. Discussion to the oral amendment. Representative Cleavorn.
Thank you. I just want to make sure that we're really clear. The author of the bill referred to this as a DE, but it's an A8.
That's correct.
So I just want to make sure we're talking about the same amendment and just...
The A8. I think she meant that in committee, that in her committee, we have the A8 in front of us right now.
Perfect. I just want to make sure that I'm... clear.
Yep.
Thank you.
We'll make sure we recite everything very clearly before we vote. So we are on the A amendment. We have an oral amendment in front of us. Discussion to the oral amendment. Lead Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Moeller, and so in light of this, what would be the if this amendment were adopted, what would be the practical effect of this section?
Representative Moeller.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Lee Garofalo. So if law enforcement is pulling somebody over for 168 or 169 violation, again, these are sort of the lower level sorts of things, then they can no longer say, do you know why I pulled you over? And if they are going to, they need to tell the driver the reason for the stop, unless it's unreasonable to do so based on the totality of the circumstances. They get there, something's changed, you pulled you over for an air freshener and the scene's fluid, something else is going on. They wouldn't have to do it. And then their failure to do so, even if they don't do all of that, because, again, this is really more of a trying to change practice, an advisory practice, then the evidence doesn't need to be excluded, and then there's no petty misdemeanor potential for the officer if they don't follow this.
Representative Garofalo.
Okay.
Any further discussion to the oral amendment to the A8? Seeing none, why don't we have Mr. Sullivan restate it before we vote?
Madam Chair and members, the amendment is to the H5216A8 amendment. The change is on page 1, line 9. After the period, insert section 645.241 does not apply to violations of this section, period.
Thank you, Mr. Sullivan. All those in favor of the oral amendment to the A8, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, please say no. The motion prevails and the oral amendment is adopted. So we have the A8 amendment as amended. Final word to your amendment, Representative Moeller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you for the leeway to discuss this in committee and to the members for your discussion of this. We are not trying to change law enforcement behavior based on reactions. We're trying to improve trust and relationships between community and law enforcement. I really don't see any purpose when you're getting pulled over for, I've had it happen to me, I'll admit it, where you get pulled over and they say, do you know why I pulled you over? Am I supposed to make an admission of guilt? Oh, I was speeding, or maybe I don't know, maybe I have a taillight out. Why are we asking, why are we putting people in that position? Why don't we say, I pulled you over because your brake light is out? It just starts the conversation off in a much better way. We really feel that this is something that is low-hanging fruit. This is something that can really improve those interactions. And with all of the safety valves we have in here about if it's unreasonable to do so under the totality of the circumstances, they don't. I mean, again, recognizing that these are for those very sort of low-level things under Chapter 168 and 169. Let's see how this goes. This seems to be simple. I forgot to mention several other states have something similar in law already. I believe Rhode Island's been doing this since 2015. And so these are just, this seems like something that is very simple to change behavior without really a negative consequence. So I hope members can support the amendment.
So to the A8 amendment as amended, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, please say no.
No.
The motion prevails and the A8 amendment as amended has been adopted. To the underlying bill, discussion. Representative Novotny.
Thank you, Chair. I want to make something perfectly clear here to both sides. I don't support the bill with this language in it at all. I supported the amendment because the amendment is at least getting less of a poke in the eye. And given the propensity with the trifecta of, I can do the math. I live in Realville. This has got a pretty good chance of making it into the law. I hope it doesn't. I hope this disappears in conference committee like other bills have disappeared. This is a bill that does nothing. With the traffic stop enforcement, and I appreciate Chair Moeller's willingness to thing. But looking at, she wants to make things better. I get this. This doesn't make any better. It won't change the behavior of a driver that knows that they're in big trouble. Every day, thousands of traffic stops are conducted in this state. And maybe they get a ticket, maybe they get a verbal warning, maybe they go to jail on a warrant. Nothing happens. It's that second decision by the driver or the passenger in the car that causes the problem, not how the officer identifies himself or which side of the car they walk up on or anything like that. So on the bill, I'm recommending a no.
Further discussion, Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just really quickly. So I was looking at the corrections portion of this and the operating adjustment. And I also serve on the Subcommittee on Employee Relations, and unfortunately we're not seeing those bills anymore, so I don't have that information at the ready, or these contracts we're not seeing anymore. So is this for overtime and new staff, or is it primarily for new staff? Because I know they were struggling so badly with overtime as they were trying to ramp up with more staff. So I'm just curious, this almost $8 million this fiscal, and then it looks like $14 million in the tails. If we could. Oh, hello, Commissioner.
We have a commissioner magically appeared.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for that.
So, Commissioner Schnell, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Paul Schnell, Commissioner at the Department of Corrections. I can answer that question, Representative. We settled the contracts. There was a substantial increase. This funding is really to address the funding, particularly for a supplemental agreement that was reached with corrections officers, which fundamentally makes our contracts competitive with both county jails and the Federal Bureau of Prisons for the first time in a long time, which now is resulting on us actually achieving some level of filling vacancies at a rate of, we believe by the end of May, being at about 97% filled, so which has not been something that we've seen since really 2018.
Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So it's primarily the new contracts that just were settled because they start the contract that we just we actually didn't vote on them because we don't vote on them anymore. We would have voted on them, but they started July 1 of 23. Contracts are confusing you, and I've had that conversation. So which settlement are we talking about? The one that just settled and we would have voted on, or is this, like, which contract is this? And I remember seeing the spreadsheet. It was a significant increase to corrections for that bargaining unit. So.
Commissioner Schnell, and we don't have the contracts in here or anything, so we'll do a few more questions on this, but we'll probably move on as it pertains to the funding that is in the bill. Commissioner Schnell.
Madam Chair, Representative Rarick, I think the funding really was the increase that went back to the contract that would have been effective July of 2023,
Okay. And
then there was a supplemental agreement for AFSCME, the COs in particular.
Representative Rarick.
Yep, no, thank you. I just wanted to know which contract it was pertaining to, because contracts and our budgets don't align, and so it's confusing. And so I thought I knew, but it's just good to know where we were deficient. So that's all I was going to ask. So thank you. And I wanted to know, like I said, if this is overtime, because they've been suffering with overtime issues and been incredibly burdened. Your COs have been incredibly burdened, and so I'm just trying to keep tabs of all that, too, what the money is for. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Rarick. Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner. Further discussion, Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know if this is for the bill's author or for fiscal staff, but what is the salary limit for the executive director of the Cannabis Expungement Board? Is there a salary limit for that person? And if there's a line item on here that salary is contained within, that could be pointed out.
Representative Moeller.
Thank you. Can you point out what line item are you looking at?
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not looking at a line item. I'm asking if it's contained in one of these line items. It's a question that is in my committee brief. And so as a question that hasn't, evidently, we don't have an answer for, so we'll see.
Mr. Johnson, welcome back to the table.
Madam Chair, Ben Johnson, House Research again. Representative Scott, I don't have a solid number answer for you. I think what you're referring to, and this has shown up in a few places, where references to a maximum salary for various positions were struck in language in a few different bills this session. That citation that's in there that I believe is in Chapter 15, I don't remember the exact citation, was actually repealed last year as part of the state government bill. And there's new language in the state government bill that's related to those maximum salaries that I believe applies to everything, but that's well out of my area and I can't give you a specific number.
Thank you, Representative Scott. This doesn't seem like it is in this bill have to do with this bill is in the fiscal of this bill. That seems like it may be best answered offline. But Representative Scott, if you have another question.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And our staff just gave me, it's on page 17, starting line point 8, where that stricken language is. So it must be that it was taken out of this bill and is, you know, now it's going to be show up in the state gov bill is the way I'm understanding this. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Johnson, do you want to?
Chair and Representative Scott, that's essentially correct. There's the citation. It's 15A.0815 subdivision 3. That was repealed last session and replaced with some new provisions, I believe, in Chapter 15A. Again, I can't point you to the exact place where they were replaced last session. This is essentially a technical cleanup, and this was part of the DPS sort of agency bill that they brought.
Thank you.
Yep. Further discussion to the bill as amended? Seeing none, final word on your bill, Representative Moeller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I'm rather shocked that the language that's just clarifying expectations that we talked about with the A8 amendment would cause members to not support this bill in light of the about approximately $9.5 million that we're providing to victim services all across the state. I'll have to have a conversation with law enforcement groups to see if they are recommending a no vote on the entire bill in light of all the law enforcement writing in support of that funding that's so desperately needed for our advocacy programs across the state, in addition to funding the correction staff that is also so desperately needed, as Commissioner Schnell talked about. So I think for those two reasons alone, this should be an easy yes vote for members. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Moeller. So now we have a series of motions and votes to merge the judiciary and public safety bills. So, Representative Moeller, you can stay there. And so, Representative Moeller, would you move that the language contained in House File 5245 be incorporated into the Public Safety and Judiciary Bill as separate articles?
That is my motion. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any discussion to the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, please say no.
No.
The motion prevails. And next, we are on to the public safety motion. Representative Moeller, would you move that the language in House File 5216, as amended, be incorporated into the Public Safety and Judiciary Budget Bill as separate articles?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Moeller. Discussion to the motion. Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, please say no.
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 The motion prevails. And so now we are on final passage of the merged bill. Representative Moeller renews her motion that House File 5216, as amended, be placed on the general register and that nonpartisan staff be directed to make technical changes as necessary. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, please say no.
No.
No. The motion prevails and House File 5216, as amended, has been placed on the general register. Thank you, Representative Moeller. And our last bill today is Representative Pawlowski, House File 5299, the Higher Education Supplemental Budget Bill.
What did you owe your money to?
So, Representative Pawlowski, as you make your way to the table, I will motion on your behalf that House File 5299 be placed on the general register.
Madam Chair, that's my motion, and I still am quite shocked by the number of the bill, 5,299. It's a number I never imagined we would reach, let alone exceed, which should be a warning to all of the members in upcoming sessions about the proliferation of doing everything with a bill. House File 5,299 is the higher ed budget bill. Our target was 500,000. The 500,000 was used to initiate a Kids on Campus initiative, which is to promote Head Start programs in our daycare centers in the MinState system. It would create a project coordinator, and it is one-time money. We did not exceed our target, and I would assume that MinState would probably spend all of the money. The other major part of the budget bill is a transfer from the, and I have to be careful about this with Representative Feist probably listening in, transferring North Star Promise approximately $5.04 million into the Fostering Independence Higher Education Grant Program. And we're doing that because we have had now a record series of increases in enrollment across our public systems. And we anticipated that we would have a lower number of students participating. Now we have more. So shifting that money over would ensure that those students are covered. And that, Madam Chair, members, is pretty much the budget.
Thank you, Representative Pawlowski. Discussion to the bill. Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Chair Pawlowski, when you shifted in this bill, when you're shifting the $5 million from North Star Promise to the Fosters, which I appreciate, I think that we need to absolutely keep our promises to those foster kids. And it was great that there was such a high demand. But does that leave a hole in North Star Promise, since you're taking $5 million from the North Star Promise?
Representative Pawlowski.
Madam Chair, this is something that I'm not thrilled about doing. Any time that we take an appropriation from a previous session and then we start to move money before the program has even gone into effect, I really don't have an answer to your question.
Representative Rare.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. So that's a, I also have those concerns, and we talked ever so briefly about it in committee, but this is actually a pretty big concern. We have no idea. I don't know if he has a better projection, but it could leave a significant hole in North Star Promise by doing this. That being said, I mean, the Foster Independence Grants Program definitely needs the money. There's no question, but I have a concern with that. The other question I would ask is, so it's $500,000 to, I think, to have a one-time staff or something so that we can, so OHE can help to create childcare centers on campuses. Mr. Chair, Chair Pawlowski, would you tell me again how many staff that is covering? And since it's one-time money, how does that work with OHE?
Madam Chair, Representative Rarick, I think we went over a tentative budget in committee. I don't have it with me, but there was a coordinator and there was staff that was given to us, so I don't have it. You have it, though, from the committee. I don't have it here, but I'm sure we could refresh our memories. Madam Chair, this is another example. I did not request any budget this year. I was fully content with reviewing the $650 million that we didn't hire at last year. We were given a budget of $500,000. We're working with the Senate, and the result of that is this proposal. So I am confident that we can get an agreement on this proposal with the Senate.
Representative Rarick.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. So, right, I mean, I have to clarify. So we had an example of a budget. It wasn't a real budget. It was from another state for doing this project and doing this expansion of a program. But when we vetted it, it was clear that it was just an example from another state. It wasn't really what we were going to do here, potentially. But I don't know if OHE knows how many staff. I mean, it's $500,000 one time, so I'm just wondering how many staff that would actually be. We got kind of a potential budget, but again, it's just something from another state. So I'm just wondering if they are here, if they can speak to that.
Madam Chair, we went through this in committee, and Representative Rarick has it. I don't see any need to repeat it here.
Thank you, Representative Pawlowski. Further discussion, Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Pawlowski. Chair Pawlowski, I just, sorry if I missed this in your presentation in my fog of getting not enough sleep last night, but could you just discuss kind of what you're doing with the ALS funding in the bill? You know, this is something that you and I have talked about it a little bit, how I, anyway, I just would like to understand better, you know, what the money is just being moved somehow. There's a change in how it's being allocated. And could you just explain that?
Representative Pawlowski.
Madam Chair, Representative Liebling. This was in the governor's supplemental budget. This was not something that we had proposed, but I picked up the governor's supplemental budget. I'm just going to read the summary. This law provides a $25 million one-time total fiscal 23 for ALS. The law provides $20 million for research grants to support clinical and transitional research For ALS, research grant recipients must be research facilities, universities, health systems located in Minnesota. An additional $5 million for caregiving support programs for families with ALS is included. The bill extends the availability of David J. Tomasoni's ALS proposal grant from June 30th, 2026 to June 30th, 2029. And that's pretty much it.
Representative Liebling.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate that.
Further discussion to the bill. Lead Garofalo.
Thank you. Madam Chair, Representative Pawlowski, what is the practical effect of the transfer out of that fund? What is, I guess I was mistaken in thinking it was a forecast appropriation for free tuition. What's the effect of that?
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, we had projected the number of students we thought would participate in the North Star Promise, and we allocated a sum of money. We are now taking from that in order to backfill an account that is declining because of increasing enrollments. So the effect might be we could be in the next legislative session, we might be having a problem with the North Star Promise.
Representative Garofalo. So,
Madam Chair, Representative Pawlowski, but people still would get free tuition. We just got to backfill it, right?
Representative Pawlowski.
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, I think that would be the case, and I would hope that whoever is here next legislative session would continue doing budgets and not bills and monitor this very closely.
Mm-hmm. Representative Garofalo.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Pawlowski, I have a different opinion on this program, particularly because of the cliff that's created, where it actually creates a significant incentive for people to not to earn, let's say, the last $3,000 to $5,000 in their income, because once they go over that cliff, they lose 100% of the tuition benefit that we're promising to them. So I have a different perspective on it, but I assume this number is it a forecast appropriation, or is it just, like, explain, I don't understand that.
Madam Chair,
Representative Garofalo, it is a forecast given our best estimate of who is available to participate in the program.
Okay.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you.
Any further discussion? Representative Cleaborn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Chair Pawlowski, I know that we've discussed this greatly in committee, but just for the sake of Ways and Means members, would you please confirm that the North Star Promise is last dollar grants?
Madam Chair, Representative Cleaborn, that's correct. It is last dollar grants. And we have gone to some extent with the Office of Higher Ed to see that this program is fiscally solvent. So we're doing this because I think there is a need that has been demonstrated, but this is something I would not recommend doing often. And I'm talking about transferring money from a program we've already appropriated in a previous session and hasn't even gone into effect, and using it for something else.
Representative Cleaborn.
Thank you. And one last follow-up. And Chair Pawlowski, the foster grant program is also last dollar grants. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Thank
Madam
you.
Chair, Representative Cleaborn is getting to the fact, I think, that North Star Promise might also cover those students. So, in effect, we might be double covering them in a way.
Thank you, Representative Pawlowski. That's helpful. Further discussion to the bill? Representative Pawlowski, final word on your bill?
Madam Chair, members, I would hope you would support the bill. The bill reflects the work on budgets, and budgets are a different type of hearing than just hearing bills. So I would hope that we would get the support of the members of this committee on a bill that has been built on budget, not on hearing bills. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Pawlowski. And with that, Representative Pawlowski renews his motion that House File 5299 be placed on the general register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, please say no.
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 The motion prevails, and House File 5299 has been placed on the general register. And that is our business for today. We will be back tomorrow at 9, and stay tuned for any further updates, and we are adjourned.